Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Oh! That was it. Dead center. Man. That was a bullseye. That was perfect.
Welcome to the Iditapod. It's a podcast about dog mushing and the Iditarod and axe throwing. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But first, here's a word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
Well, my friends, since the last time we talked, the more than four dozen sled dog teams competing in the 2019 Iditarod have mushed, or are mushing, into the mountainous Alaska Range. When mushers say these are the most technical sections of the trail, they mean it's an area where mistakes can be especially dangerous, and expert sled driving is of the utmost importance. So, the Rainy Pass checkpoint on the frozen alpine Puntilla Lake is a spot many mushers stop to prepare for the often tough trail ahead. But not last year's second place finisher Nick Petit, who stayed only a few minutes, long enough for race officials and veterinarians to check out his team and gear. In fact, looking at Petit's checkpoint times on Iditarod.com, he hasn't stayed more than a few minutes at any checkpoint in this race other than Roan, where he stayed a whopping 20 minutes. Instead, Petit has opted, as mushers will do sometimes, to avoid the hubbub of the checkpoints and camp his team out along the trail. They pick up straw, they pick up supplies from their drop bags, and they take that along with them down the trail and just do their own thing. That's why, after having the lead earlier in the race, several teams passed Petit on the way from Roan to Nikolai. That is a village on the upper Kuskokwim River, roughly 250 miles into the 1,000-mile race. While Petit rested between Roan and Nikolai, the race GPS tracker shows the defending champ, the Norwegian by way of Willow, Your Life Seth Olsom, passed Petit's team, as did several others, including Bethel's Pete Kaiser, Fairbanks and Montanan Jesse Royer, and Two Rivers musher Ali Zirkel. Olsom was the first to arrive in Nikolai a little after 6:30 Tuesday morning. And remember, the race just started Sunday in Willow with the race clock ticking at the restart, so they're covering a lot of ground here very quickly, as they do. And we're looking forward to hearing more about how it went for the team's runs from Rainy Pass to Roan and Nikolai. While the race reached Nikolai Tuesday morning, we're going to go back to Rainy Pass, where as Iditarod mushers make their way over the Alaska Range, they find the last checkpoint for supplies and a rest at the Rainy Pass Lodge on Puntilla Lake. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, it's a good place to pause, maybe reflect, and definitely to prepare before heading toward the most technical sections of the trail.
Saristoki pulls onto Puntilla Lake with a team of dogs that has been gradually climbing the Alaska Range.
Bib number?
52.
Perfect.
52.
Okay. We're going to give you
so
your bag
stay
here.
Or are you going to rest?
I'm going to stay.
She's going to stay. Okay.
Yeah.
Stokey grabs three heavy drop bags full of supplies and parks her dogs for a rest. She's in good company, except for Nick Petit and Pete Kaiser, who flew through mid-morning. Almost all the teams at the front of the pack are taking a break. The checkpoint at the Rainy Pass Lodge has a festive atmosphere. Frozen Lake is cluttered with planes and helicopters that bring tourists for day trips, the rustic wooden buildings ringed with picturesque mountain peaks. It's not where Matt Hall would have chosen to stop, but he wanted a veterinarian to check out a dog's toenail problem.
A little noisy, but they rest good.
Hall came off the Yukon Quest a few weeks ago and likes camping out with his team beyond the hubbub of checkpoints. But he knows that enough teams are likely to stop here that he can keep toward the front of the pack.
It's definitely an advantage being towards the front early on, just because of that. You know, you get 20,000 dog feet over it and 50 sleds, and, you know, it starts getting softer and softer then as the heat of the day comes on, too.
A hard-packed, smooth trail that gets punchy and pulverized after heavy traffic is slower and more effort for the dogs. In the cool early hours, before many mushers had gone over, Linwood Fiedler says the trail heading up toward the Rainy Pass checkpoint was something to behold.
I don't think I've ever seen it better. It's certainly one of the best trails ever. Yeah, I mean, it's the Iditarod Trail, but boy, it's pretty good shape.
Fiedler also wants to take advantage of the midday warmth, rest his dogs while the bright sun and relative warmth soften the trail.
It's just going to get warmer and warmer and warmer, and when it's like this, 5 degrees going up makes a huge difference. I mean, it's just, you can just see that team just kind of wilt. You know, they're like a car with no antifreeze in the radiator.
After the lodge, the route keeps going up until it hits Srinny Pass itself. The trail weaves back and forth over a river enveloped by steep mountain peaks on both sides. This year, trail crews had to build 20 bridge crossings over sections of open water. From Pontilla Lake, it's 35 miles up and through the pass to the Rhone checkpoint. It's a kind of dog driving that requires some finesse.
I'd have to say my team is pretty controlled anyway.
Jessie Royer's in a good mood as she straws her dogs. It's not just the pass that's challenging, she says. What follows are the drops and turns of the Dalzell Gorge, and then the bumps and tussocks of the Buffalo Tunnels and Farewell Burn. Royer's approach is to rest and charge up her dogs before embarking on the hours up and over the pass, but keep them moving, winding down their power until all the technical stretches are behind them.
I don't stop until we get out of it all, so I do it all in one run. Because otherwise, if you stop in Rhone, you're leaving with a fresh team right away on the Buffalo Tunnels, which is even worse. Buffalo Tunnels is always worse than the Gorge.
It's a stage in the race when there's strategy not just in reading the trail, but knowing how to use a dog team's relative restedness or fatigue to help navigate perilous terrain. From the Rainy Pass Lodge on the Iditarod Trail, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
So between Rainy Pass and Nikolai is the checkpoint of Rhone. To get there, the teams navigate some pretty treacherous sections, reaching the race's highest elevation of 3,160 feet. I mean, it's a mountain pass. You're going on some pretty narrow trail, and there's mountains and ravines. There are twists and turns, ups and downs. There's some mushing on the edge of the ravine. It's intense. If you want to get a look at it, I encourage you to Google Jeff King Dalzell Gorge, and that's D-A-L-Z-E-L-L Gorge. The first video that should come up is from a very low snow year in 2014. Those sections of trail destroyed some sleds, and they destroyed some mushers' dreams of reaching Nome that year. I first saw those sections of trail that same year in 2014 from the safety of a helicopter. That was my rookie year on the Iditarod. But as a rookie in the race, it must be daunting to hear the stories and then finally get up into the pass and see what you've gotten yourself into. And Jeff King's a four-time champion. He's a very experienced musher. He's run the Iditarod as much as anybody competing in the race these days. But in addition to the really competitive slate of mushers in this year's Iditarod, which includes 5 past champions, King one of them, nearly 1 in 5 Iditarod mushers this year is brand new to the race. As KNOM's Ben Matheson reports, the 10 rookies each set out on the trail with a deep range of skills and experiences.
21-year-old Martin Apayalik-Raitan is coming off a Yukon Quest in which he took home Rookie of the Year honors. But he had a tough time managing his sleep during the race, something he wants to improve upon in his second 1,000-mile race.
Mainly to have a good time, and we'll see if I'll be able to race or if I'll oversleep again, and then, you know, I'll have to adjust my expectations. But I'll try my best and have fun.
Raitan lives on the North Slope in Kaktovik, where, among other things, he guides polar bear viewing expeditions. After the race, he'll skip the jet and instead mush his team north to Kotzebue, where his dad will run the Kobuk 440. After that, it's hundreds of miles more north and to the east to Kaktovik, the same epic trip he made 2 years ago with his dad. Mushing is also a family affair for Jessica Klaika, who grew up the oldest of 7 kids running dogs in Bethel on the Kuskokwim River. Her passion for mushing also overlaps with her professional life. She's a practicing veterinarian. But Klaika says her professional knowledge can cause her to overthink things with her dogs.
And so I see something happen, you know, like a dog, I toss him a piece of fish, and, you know, if he doesn't eat it right away, I start going, okay, wait, what's going on? Why doesn't he want to eat the fish? You know, and I'm like smelling the fish. Is it okay? You know, but for the most part, I think it's very advantageous because I can kind of calm a lot of, I get a lot of calls from mushers the last few weeks before I did Iditarod asking a lot of questions, and it's kind of fun.
For more than 2 decades, Ed Hopkins from Tagish Yukon Territory has been running the Yukon Quest, notching several top 5 finishes. But after watching his wife, Michelle Phillips, run the Iditarod in recent years, he says the Iditarod temptation became hard to ignore.
Eventually you get the itch, and I got the itch.
His team has already completed a 1,000-mile race this year. Phillips ran the team to a 4th-place finish in the Quest last month. Hopkins says the race-hardened dogs know more about the trail than he does.
I'm a rookie in a lot of senses. Like, I don't know some of the some of the little hidden things that are out there that give advantage to all the other people. So I'm just going to go and do my own thing, pretty much.
Norwegian Niklas Wikstrand has worked with Pete Kaiser and Bethel for a few years and gotten his race experience in brutal Kuskokwim River conditions. He's on a specific schedule to get the dogs the right racing experience.
Go a little slower, rest enough, and that's our team's main goal, is to rest and run quite conservative and make sure that as many dogs get to Nome and just keeping the dogs happy and healthy.
As the rookies navigate the race's most technical and steep sections in the first couple days of the race, they'll be one step closer to joining the elite club of Iditarod finishers. For KNOM, I'm Ben Matheson in Anchorage.
These rookie standings are definitely subject to change as teams leapfrog each other here in the race. At last check, Ed Hopkins was leading the rookies in 32nd place, then Richie Beatty in 34th, Sebastian Dos Santos Borges in 37th place. There's Jessica Klaika, we just heard from, in 38th place. Niklas Wikstrand in 41st. Blair Braverman, 42nd. Ryan Santiago in 46th. Allison Lifka in 47th. Martin Apayawik-Raitan in 48th. And bringing up the rear in 52nd place, Victoria Hardwick. At last check, all the rookies in this year's race still yet to reach the checkpoint of Roan. And I want to mention Roan real quick. It's not really a community or anything. They list it as population zero. It's basically just a cabin or a roadhouse, they call it. And definitely the population swells when it's an Iditarod checkpoint. They've got veterinarians there to check the dogs. They've got race officials. And then, of course, the mushers coming on in. And different Iditarod checkpoints have totally different flavors. Some are hectic, full of visitors and volunteers. Others are literal ghost towns or nestled quite deliberately in the middle of the wilderness. The Roan checkpoint is the latter. With hardly any amenities or distractions, the volunteer staffers have to find ways to amuse themselves in the lulls when there are no mushers. Maybe a little boring, they're trying to entertain themselves. This year, as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes found out, they are throwing axes.
That was it.
That was dead center.
That was a bullseye. That was perfect.
What's the right technique for doing it? Like, how do you, when you're giving somebody an introductory lesson, how do you explain it?
Well, normally I ask, you know, right or left-handed. If you're right-handed, you want your left hand on the bottom, right hand on top. Well, I try to keep everything in a straight line and use your whole body. Yeah.
What are you guys doing right now?
Axe throwing? Yeah. We're axe throwing. Yeah, that was it. That was it. That was perfect.
The Roan checkpoint is mostly just a cabin. It's in a clearing in a pretty wooded area just after the Dalzell Gorge and near a river. They've got some Arctic ovens set up, some snow machines. There's an outhouse, but mostly it's a one-room cabin from 1910 that the Park Service maintains. Nowadays, it's a shelter cabin.
We find something to do. We tell a lot of stories.
Throw weapons in wood.
Well, we don't allow guns out when the mushers are here, but pre and post race, we do a little target shooting. But I asked Mark to bring an axe so we could, because I've always wanted to do this. I'd never done it before.
Oh, and you guys knew each other before this?
I met him last summer at the Lumberjack Show.
Yeah. The volunteers here have to be a little bit more hardy than in other places, because they're left out here mostly unsupported. It's basically camping.
Well, nobody lives here year-round, so we all come out for Iditarod because we like dogs and we like going to remote places in Alaska and meeting people from all over, and it's a satisfaction of we're helping people get down the trail, whether they're snow machining or walking or mushing dogs, or so it's a good camaraderie feeling of Alaska.
Do you like throwing the axe?
Yeah, it feels good. You should give it a try.
There you go.
Nice.
That was great. And when you release, you want kind of release high so the axe carries down into the target because it's heavy.
Do you guys always do this every year out here?
This is my first year, so I don't think so, but maybe from now on. Well, I got started in college. It was a collegiate sport, so it's called the Woodsman's Team in college, and so competed collegiately, and me personally, I ended up doing well enough at the end of my 4 years, I was able to go pro, and then I competed professionally, and then also did lumberjack shows.
Is that what brought you up to Alaska?
Yeah, I did shows for Great Alaskan Lumberjack Show in Ketchikan. I did that for 4 years. One of my good friends, Tina Shear, owns a show in Maine, and she's the one that does a show at the Alaska State Fair, and she's actually worked the Roan Checkpoint, too, in the past.
I still have a lot of questions about Zach throwing axes. And that's a contrived segue to today's listener question. It's actually two related questions from students in Aaron Knight's language arts classes out in Unalaska.
My name's Alyssa. I'm also from Unalaska, and my group mates are Michelle, Natalie, and Alyssa Marie. And our question is, have any of the mushers got hurt, and did they have to stop participating in the race?
Hi, my name's Aaron. My groups are Mateus and Zach. What happens if the dog got hurt?
Thanks for listening, and thanks for the great questions, everybody. So what happens when there are injuries on the trail? Here's our trail reporter, Zachariah Hughes, with the answer.
If a dog's hurt, his or her musher will leave it at a checkpoint. The veterinarians take care of it, and the Iditarod takes over. They'll take groups of dogs that are hurt or dropped or sick and move them back to Anchorage or somewhere where a handler or somebody who knows the musher picks up the dog and takes care of it for a while. Mushers, unless they're really, really hurt, will keep going. One time, Aaron Burmeister broke his knee coming down the Dalzell Gorge, and he finished the Iditarod hundreds of miles later, kind of limping over the finish line, but he made it. So other times, mushers will fall off their sleds and crack ribs and maybe withdraw or maybe keep going. They are pretty tough, and it's really up to them if they're hurt, whether or not they want to keep trying to finish the race.
Thanks for getting that answer to us, Zach. And as always, I want to remind the listeners that you can send your questions to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. The best way to do that and maybe even get on the podcast is to open up your smartphone, find that voice memo app, record your question in your own voice, and then send that to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. We'll try to get you an answer. Well, everybody, that's about all the time we have for today. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. I'm your host, Casey Grove, and until next time, happy trails.
You just got to be ready to be game on and not be sleepy. So,
how are you going to do that?
How am I going to do that?
Yeah, you,
I'm going to try to take an hour nap here.
Out here, just in the sled bag, or
yeah, I may
inside?
Lay down with them, or I guess there's a little cabin over there we can get in if we want.
But you don't have like a gym linear body exoskeleton system for the
no.
gorge?
Yeah. No, no. My head hits a tree. It's what's going to happen.
All right. Well, I hope you make it out in one piece. Thanks
yeah,
a lot,
thanks.
Man. Take care.